This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good Tuesday morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I am Christy Landwehr from Aurora, Colorado, and you are listening to Horses in the Morning for November 18th, episode 1044. This episode today is brought to you by the Certified Horsemanship Association. Good morning, horse world.
Houston, we have a problem.
Ability equals skill plus knowledge.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Here's a safety tip for you from the Certified Horsemanship Association.
Missed it by that much.
How can I change this to make it better the next time?
Help you, I can. Yes.
Time for Training Tuesday on Horses in the Morning with the Certified Horsemanship Association.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us on this chilly morning around the country, and we appreciate you being here. And I want to welcome Christy back. Thank you for joining us again, Christy, from a very chilly Colorado.
Yes, thank you, Glenn. It is still a bit cold here, but, you know, we're going to be probably a high of 39 today. We're above freezing. We're getting better.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, you said last week you had a high of 10 one day or something. Pretty cold.
We did. Yeah, 10 high and a minus 2. No wind chill. The actual temperature in my car, minus 2.
Ooh, that's just unnecessary.
I noticed in Kentucky and Kentucky and Ohio today, a lot of our listeners in that area, Kentucky was at 13 this morning. So it is chilly all across the country. Winter has definitely set in. A lot of people think much too early. But if it makes all of you feel better, we are 45 this morning here in Florida, and it's going to get down to 26 tonight. So we are not exempt from chilly here in Florida. We get it occasionally. But then it'll warm up to 80 tomorrow. So that's where the difference is. So now, Christy, we have a good show planned for today. A lot of guests lined up to come on today's show. Let's have Jennifer tell us about it.
On today's Certified Horsemanship, we're going to change the name of your organization, Christy. I cannot say Certified Horsemanship Association before 11 a.m. I just can't. On today's Certified Horsemanship Association training episode, it's all about every person's favorite pastime, and that's going to be horse shopping. Guests weighing in on shopping smart for your first horse or a new member of your school string include Jennifer Willey and Teresa Cackert. And starting things off today, Patty Colbert has an update on what's going on over at the Time to Ride program. So stay tuned for the fray, folks.
Well, now, does she say it Colbert like the Colbert Report, or does she say it Colbert?
I think she says it Colbert like a cowgirl.
Okay, I was wondering about that, because that's a name you really never heard of till the Colbert Report, you know, so... Name that you haven't heard too often. Well, now, so what's been new with you out there in Colorado? Well, you did last time we talked was right before you had the national meeting in Lexington.
Yes.
So how'd it go?
You know, it went fine. First of all, I got on my plane okay right after the radio show, so that was good. Rushed on out there, and that was fine. And, yeah, we had just shy of 300 people there, so we were pretty happy with the turnout. And they were from, I believe, the last count, 32 states and 2 provinces. So from kind of all over, which is neat. We really love it when people come in from a bunch of different places. And we had amazing weather. It was right before this cold snap, and boy, was it pretty. There was still all the leaves around the trees. The Kentucky Horse Park was in full fall color. We did some YouTube videos on the Sunday, and it was perfectly still, so we could be outside even with the microphones. It was good. We were pretty happy about the whole thing. It all worked out fine, and the horses that we used from Asbury University were wonderful, and the students that took care of them while we were able to, you know, have them in the different classes. Yeah, it all worked out like it should have. Knock on wood. Good day.
Well, we had Darlie Newman on last show, and she was one of your keynote speakers, and I did speak to her after, and she said that she thought it went pretty well.
Yes, she did great. We do a pretty lengthy evaluation after our conference is over, and people have been reporting in that they really enjoyed Darlie's talk a lot. You know, people are very brave, Glenn, I've found out, behind the computer screen. Not as brave face-to-face, but you give them access to, like, a survey afterwards online, and a lot of times they'll let you have it. They'll let you know the truth. And this year, it's coming back. It's all pretty positive. So, good stuff. You know, rarely do
you
rock star status. So when you get to, you get excited, right?
With the exception of radio listeners, they just let us have it right away. We don't have to wait.
They don't wait for a survey. It's right
no,
there.
No, we don't wait for surveys.
So,
I do
Christy,
want to apologize to everybody. Let me apologize real quick. I wanted to say this at the top of the show that we did have a technical issue in getting yesterday's recorded show out. So that went out this morning and is out. Thank you to everybody who let me know right away. So appreciate that. All right,
yeah, we always know
they're an instantaneous audience. It's good,
yes.
Though, that you know when something's going wrong. They're instantaneous audience. They don't need to wait around.
Right.
Yes.
I knew somebody was listening, or trying to. In this case, they weren't listening because they couldn't. But we appreciate them trying.
So, Christy,
so I have a good story.
Guys,
oh, go ahead.
You said you were doing some YouTube videos at the conference. Were you making more videos for the Certified Horseman, the CHA?
CHA, there you go.
Channel?
We were, yes. We ended up making 5 more. So those will be coming out in January because we edit them over the winter months. So we'll have those. And then we also produce some full-length DVDs that will be for sale on some of the presenters' topics. It was good.
All kinds of cool stuff coming up. What is the CHA's YouTube channel called?
It's CHA Instructors with an S on the end.
There you go. So when you go to YouTube, I think there's a search place for find channels, and you just go to CHA Instructors plural, and you'll find it. Because I've paged through there many times. There's lots of cool stuff, so there's going to be new ones.
Yeah, it's fun. And then we also use that same tagline for our Facebook page and our Twitter page and all that, just to keep it easy. But yeah, we only... right now do those videos once a year during conference, because that's when we have our videographers there and a lot of instructors there that are willing to get in front of a microphone and do them real quick. Because I'm kind of mean, you know, when I'm the producer of it, I have to remember, right, I had a TV background. So I'm like, why can't you do this in one take? It's only a 2 to 5 minute video. Why are we having to take this 10 times? And so people get, oh, I don't think I want to do a video with Christy. Pretty funny.
You're the mean director.
I learned something that I said, and I had no idea. So you know how you'll have like a little hospitality suite, right? And people come up to it after your conference is over at the end of each day in the hotel, and you're chit-chatting. So I'm behind the door, and I'm finishing up a text. I really was not eavesdropping. I was finishing up a text, and I hear, yeah, Christy this, Christy that. I'm like, oh, I'm definitely going to eavesdrop now. So I put my phone down, and I'm listening. And they said that I always... like they were talking about stories when I call each of them up and I'll say, hey, I got this radio show. You should be on it. You know, it's with horses in the morning. You'll be all right. It'll be fine. Or, hey, we got this webinar and you could totally do a talk on this. It'll be okay. You'll be great. It'll be fine. I had no idea I did that. So I go walking into the room and they're all laughing at me. And they're like, you do that all the time. I said, I do? And so I noticed it all throughout the conference. I would say to somebody, like, they're like, oh, I don't know if I should ride the Rainer, you know, at National Reining Horses here, and I just don't know if I should do that. I'd look at the instructor, you'll do great. It'll be fine. And then I started laughing. Oh, I guess I do that. Okay.
You get that from your kids. Fine.
Throw them to the wall.
Drop play.
Johnny fell off the swing and he has a bloody nose. Oh, he'll be fine.
He'll be fine. He'll get over it. He'll stop bleeding eventually.
I think you're right.
That's where you get that from. So now you did do the Rider Rainer thing. How did that go?
It was amazing. we had two local instructors come in, Cole and Gabe, and they're from a ranch there in Lexington. And then we had two of the staff people from NRHA come. And Haley and Samantha, the staff members, actually took the microphone and talked about the reining programs and different ways that our instructors could get their students involved in reining or themselves at, you know, the novice level and how it all worked. And then 15 of our instructors got to sign up to ride these amazing mares that the gentleman brought in that, boy, they were good. And they got to practice everything but a slide because they didn't have sliders on, but they got to practice a rollback, and they got to practice lead changes, and, of course, this wonderful spin that everyone loves to practice. And for most of these instructors, they had never ridden a trained reiner. Like, they had ridden maybe one that was, you know, on its way to becoming, or maybe one that had done it years and years ago but had gotten pretty rusty. Not one that's tuned up like that, but they had a great time.
Huh, well, good. That's fun. And, you know, it is completely different. It is kind of funny. I know at the WEG we enjoyed watching all the English riders try and do reining because, and some succeeded if they let go, you know, if they let go. And just, you know, I'd let go of what they were taught, you know, previously and just had fun with it. And then you had you could tell which ones were trainers because they didn't let go. You know, they were still riding English trying to do reining. And it really was kind of funny to watch some of them.
Yes. Well, we're thinking next year we have a gentleman, we're going to be in Amarillo, Texas in October. And again, for everyone listening, this is open to the public. You don't even have to be an instructor to come. You can certainly come and partake no matter where you are with your horse journey. And we're having the cowboy mounted shooters are probably coming, it looks like, at this point, and also the cutters. So we might have a lot more opportunity to do different types of things.
Ooh,
which will be
cutting. Fun. I'd totally try that.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Anything with a cow, I want to try that.
And mounted shooting, too, is becoming so popular now. And, you know, I think that would be fun to do. I really do. I think that would be a good time. And, of course, Tammy, who's host of our one day a month here for the Road to the Horse, is a world champion mounted shooter. So we talk about mounted shooting when she comes on. I have to get Tammy over there to do at your meeting. She would be great.
Oh, I would love that. Absolutely.
Yeah, she'd be great. She has 162, I think she said, belt buckles on her wall now from championships
wow.
that she's won. Yeah. She had this case built, and it's huge. It is huge, and there really is like 162 belt buckles on her wall. I said, how many of those have you worn? She said, I only have one I wear. It's my favorite, so that's the one she wears. Well, now we are talking about buying and leasing and first horses. You said for your first personal horse, and then also we're going to talk about horses for equine businesses, for riding programs, things like that, right?
We are, a little bit of both, yes, because I think that sometimes those can be very different. You know, I've worked with a lot of school horses in my time, and every now and then you come across a horse that doesn't want a bunch of different riders on it. It wants one rider. It says, you know what, I want one bond and I want one relationship and that's all I want. And then you have other horses that could really care less. They're like, you know, whatever, I punch in the time clock, I punch it out, put whoever on my back, I'll tolerate it, we'll get this done and that'll be just fine. And they just want to have, you know, some sort of human contact, and they just love it and they don't mind who's on them. So I think that they're sometimes a very different animal you're going to end up with when you buy personally versus buying for a trail ride program or a lesson barn program.
Right. Right, for sure. And, you know, we've talked a little bit on the show in the past about, you know, horse shopping and had some, you know, talked to some people about horse shopping, but we've really never talked about buying that first horse. So I'm excited for that today. I think that'll, you know, we have a lot of listeners to this show that don't own their own horses, that either lease or take lessons or none of the above, have owned horses in the past and don't currently own one. So I think that'll be a lot of good information.
Yes, and the two ladies that we're talking to, boy, they have bought and sold a lot of horses in their time based on the different jobs that they've had. So I think that they'll have a lot of really useful info for us. So I'm excited to have them on as well.
Very good. But our first guest is ready, if you want to introduce her.
I would love to. So this is Patty Colbert, and I have known Patty for quite a few years. She has worn many hats in the horse industry. Right now, she is the current marketer for the Time to Ride program, which is an initiative of the American Horse Council that we will talk more about. She has also been the Senior Director of Development for the American Quarter Horse Foundation and raised millions of dollars for them. She also was very involved with the Western Heritage Foundation, and the Extreme Mustang Makeover, of course, was part of that Mustang Heritage Foundation, and she did quite a bit with them. And just recently, she won the American Horse Publications 2014 Equine Visionary Award. So with no further ado, hello, Patty. How are you?
Hey, I'm great, Christy. How are you?
I am good. So I was letting Glenn and Jen know that you were our keynoter at our awards banquet on Saturday night a few weeks ago, and we loved having you. What did you think about our folks there at CHA?
Well, I think that the Certified Horsemanship Association is definitely the most important, as Ward Stutz with AQHA also said during his comments, the most important organization that we have in our industry right now. And I'm not just kind of blowing smoke at you, Christy. It's the reality. All of our studies and research that we've done have determined that portals for entry into the industry, you know, is through the lesson giver, is through the stable owner, and how we can help them be more accessible to new people is the real thrust of Time to Ride. So to see all those young trainers and teachers and instructors and mentors that you've developed there through Certified Horsemanship Association was just very rewarding and a real blast. So thanks for including me.
Well, Patty, thank you. You know, we all have mentors in our life, and I think I told you this before, but I'm going to embarrass you on the show. You are definitely one of mine. You've done so much in our industry.
You just need to get out more. Yeah, you need to get out a lot more.
She said it's too cold. She's not going out more.
Yeah, right.
You need to put me in front of more mentors then, kind of guide me down the path, Patty, of others. But, well, it was great to have you. She did a talk, Glenn, on generational differences, and it was so much fun because, of course, Patty and I are from different generations according to the date cutoff. So, of course, we always tease one another, but it was a very good talk. We enjoyed it very much.
Well, it's really important for all of our providers, all of your listeners out there that are stable owners and lesson givers, to realize that you market and talk to generations differently. We all know that the boomers were the largest, you know, generation to come along, and really because of our connection of a constant image of a horse through the Westerns, through Roy and Dale and Fury and Flicka and all those, we had that horse and that horseback riding as part of our dream, and a very prominent dream to boomers. As you move towards, as you move into the younger generation, the attitude toward horses changes with, you know, Spirit and Dances with the Wolves had more of that horse being an emotional connection to humans. And then, you know, as you move forward into even these millennials where, you know, it really needs to read like a video game. They need to have kind of some kind of immediate sensational fun and engagement. All of our providers need to be very, very much aware of safe ways, but to engage these different markets. And that's what we talked about there at your meeting. And you know, resonated obviously with a lot of people because I had a lot of tremendous comments afterwards about how they realize, you know, that this older market has sustained us for a long time. You know, I'm going to guess you've got a demographic of listeners today that are, you know, gals very similar to me, and they're, you know, 50s and 60s that have been passionate about horses and are now running their own facilities, you know, with the support of younger men and women as, you know, as the backbone of it. But we're dying off, you know. As I said in the speech, there's 9,000 people turning 65 every day in the United States. And as we age out, our activities age out. So we have to be very much aware about engagement of these younger generations through moms and their kids and through women that, you know, that want that experience for themselves, that, you know, people see this, women see this horse particularly as, you know, a way to avoid the daily grind and to go find some real purpose, some self-purpose in a relationship with the horse. So we've got to be aware of that in good customer service and provide those emotional experiences for people.
So Glenn Patty was teasing me because when they did all their research for Time to Ride and kind of found out photos, they did focus groups and what photo resonated with people. There's this photo, if you get on the Time to Ride website, that has a woman kind of standing up in her stirrups with her arms out and her hair behind her flowing in the breeze, racing this Palomino horse down the beach. And her comment is always, and look, she doesn't have on a helmet.
Well, you know, it's kind of like the truck ad. You know, when you're trying to entice somebody to buy a, you know, you don't put on a safety belt first. You put that pickup truck on the edge of a cliff or, you know, doing something very exciting. You don't just focus on stop and fasten your seatbelt because you want to entice people into your world. And that whole Black Stallion scene, which we all know in our mind of the little boy galloping down the beach, resonates with so many people. And we, you know, and that was research driven, Chrissy. That, you know, that photo was selected by hundreds and hundreds of women that we did some seats and saddles events for at rodeos and racetracks. And they resonated with that because, you know, that's the sexy stuff. Horses are
very sexy. Yeah, that's the romantic side coming out there.
Yeah. And we've got to use that to engage the public. You know, once you get them to the barn, you explain how you have to be safe and you have to protect yourself and your children. And you explain all that to these very rational mothers and very careful mothers. And they get that then. But the hook, you know, the hook has to be a little bit sexy. So that's
Let's go back a little bit while you're talking about getting kids involved. And I was just thinking about what you were saying about how it's changed through the generations. I mean, when we were kids, we went out and played and you rode bike and you didn't have video games and all of that stuff. And you also didn't have the 1,000 activities that parents are driving their kids to all the time. If we could ride our bikes there, we didn't do it. So we had, you know, you were involved in school sports and then that was it. We really didn't have all the extracurricular stuff. Has that hurt, do you think, through your research? Have you found that having so many activities that they can do, organized activities now, that they can do has hurt them getting into horses?
Well, certainly, because, you know, it's accessibility is the number one concern with moms. And forgive me for not talking about dads also. It is a family unit, but the mom is really kind of the CFO of the family. She's making decisions on, you know, where they're going and what they're going to spend. Overall, and yes, the answer to your question is a resounding yes, because the competition for time is immense, and then it becomes extremely easy to plunk a kid down in front of a television or some kind of a screen involvement and have them entertained for that amount of time. So we can't bitch about it, excuse me for my language, we can't, you know, go behind the barn and stub our toe in the dirt. We have to figure out methods and ways for engagement. And that's what the horse challenge did, the 100-day horse challenge. The Time to Ride effort created the 100-day horse challenge last spring and summer and challenged stable owners and barns and groups to connect with newcomers. And what we found was just amazing is, you know, they did that to collect contact emails of newcomers, and the small, medium, or large barns in the three different divisions were vying for big prize money. I mean, it was $25,000 for large organizations, $10,000 for medium, and $15,000 for medium and $10,000 for small. So let me get back to your point is that those stable owners that were aggressive about that took their ponies and horses to farmers markets, to church groups, to mommy-connected organizations. We all know about taking horses to Girl Scouts and things, but they went outside that box into, you know, a variety of youth and family oriented deals and found, you know, to quote one of our winners was, you know, you paid us to to learn to market ourselves outside our own arena. I think so many of our stables just expect people to come to them, and the taking the time to do outreach to newcomers where those newcomers will be takes extra effort, but it's proved to be very rewarding. One of the winners that was a member of CHA at the convention there, Christy, I can't remember her name, but she came up to me and shared her story about how, well, they tried it one time, didn't work well. Then after we did some Facebook advertising, which, as you guys know, is the cheapest advertising in the world, they did some of that and ended up with, you know, 20 new people after their efforts on learning how to use Facebook. So that's where our focus is going to be with Time to Ride. And in the upcoming months, we're going to have a whole segment for industry professionals and help them with their marketing and outreach.
Can I ask both of you guys to follow up on that? You know, one of the things I've seen a lot of down here in Florida, in Ocala anyway, which is, you know, horse country, is we've seen a lot of Groupons for riding lessons. Have you talked to any barns who have tried the Groupon thing?
Yes. Tricky, do you want to answer that?
Yeah, absolutely. We've had quite a few, Glenn, that have tried that. And I'll tell you, it's either a resounding success or a horrible failure is what they found.
And that's
one of the
true,
reasons,
by the way, of any business that tries Groupon. Some, you know, it works for some. I think it also depends on what your expectation is going in.
Yeah. Well, I agree, but let me tell you why it was a horrible failure. It wasn't a horrible failure from the standpoint of they didn't get anybody. It was a horrible failure because they didn't put limits on it and they couldn't satisfy the client. They ended up with all these people and they had like two lesson horses, you know,
and
instead of being a big barn.
That's the same thing that happens to restaurants and everybody else that tries it. They're not prepared for the other side, and that's if it goes too well. And that's where they end up in trouble.
Well,
even
but
when
I'll tell you,
does...
on the other side, they did great. You know, on the other side, some of them did great. The only problem is that they do take quite a bit of your money, so you just have to be prepared for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very expensive.
You
People
have to look at
realize.
It as a marketing expense. I mean, it really
Absolutely.
Is.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But we,
well, that.
Go ahead, please.
Go ahead, Patty. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to end that up with, yes, all of these things are business decisions. And our people running these barns and stables are so busy. I mean, they are so busy. You know, the comments are just priceless with, you know, I just by chance read Stable Management Magazine, where we put a big piece about the 100-day horse challenge. I only accidentally read it when, you know, it was really a rainy day and I got to pick up my stack of magazines and go through them. You know, our people are hugely busy. So to help them do simple marketing tasks and simple marketing outreach, I think will really make an impact on the growth of our industry.
I think so too, Patty. And, you know, one of the ladies you were talking about, that was actually Cheryl with CRK Stables in Yorba Linda, California. And I know she had great results. And then we had another one here in Colorado, Promenade Stables, that did really well. And then CHA as a whole, we had about 8 to 12 barns that actually did the Time to Ride Challenge under our umbrella and competed on our behalf. And we ended up third in the large category. And we were thrilled about that. And we were really excited to be able to be a part of this because, you know, 80% of our instructors teach beginners. That's what we do. We don't teach necessarily the high competition show rider or whatever the case may be. So it was just a pleasure to be involved in it. And we want to do more next year, Patty, whatever you need our folks to do. We're on board. I think they were convinced. Now we just need to share it with more of them.
I think it's great. And I think it's a great ground for CHA to grow because such a large percentage of the stables that participated with us are not members of anything. They are not CHA members. They are not, you know, breed association or discipline members. They are just very, very busy giving riding lessons and finding these exquisite lesson horses that you guys are going to be talking about. So, you know, we've all got to work together. I think I see the industry collaborating more now than I ever have in my past 50 years involvement. And it's just, it's very rewarding. You know, we've got to work together to grow this because, you know, we don't want to gloom and doom. It is not a dying sport. sport. It is an engaged and growing sport, and we have to act that way and feel that way and sell it. So thanks for everything that you do there at CHA, Christy, and thank you guys for the opportunity to talk to your listeners this morning. It's that rah-rah. We all got to work together, and that's what CHA does.
Amen.
Christy,
want to
get my pulse? Well, thank you, Patty, for joining us. We really appreciate it. You know, I thought I had talked to you in the past, and I took a look, and actually, you were one of our first guests when we first started the Horse Radio Network back in your Mustang days, and it was in 2009 we had you on. It was when we had no listeners, and you were kind enough to come on anyway, and now we got a lot of listeners in your back, so I'm glad of that.
Well, anytime. I mean, you're doing great things. Your communication tool is a benefit to everyone. So, anyway, anything I can do,
thanks,
y'all,
Patty.
Just call her. Okay.
TimeToRide.com is the website, and we'll talk to you again. We'll talk to you again before 5 years is up, okay?
There you go. Thank you.
Well, that was interesting. You know, I often wondered about that. I've been wanting to ask you about the Groupon thing because I just got another one yesterday for another riding stable in the area, and it's the second or third time they've done it, so I guess they've kind of figured it out. But I was wondering if they work. And, you know, I would think it would be a good way to get those new people in who may not try you if they had to pay full price. I wonder what the turnover rate is. I wonder how many people they get back after that Groupon use.
Yeah, and I think it's depends, because some mommies, you know how she said that we tend to be the CFOs of our little family units. Some mommies I know are all about the Groupon. So they're going to Groupon the horses, and they're going to Groupon rock climbing, then they're going to Groupon karate, and that's all they're going to do. They're never going to engage. And then you have others that, you know, will engage. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I think that depends.
One of the things that, just to put my point of view out, I got a polo lesson by Groupon once when we lived in Kentucky. And I took a friend along. It was a polo lesson. It was like a pair or something. And very much looked forward to it. I had taken a polo lesson once before, many years before that, and really enjoyed it. And I found this local place. It was 15 minutes from my home. I thought, dang, that'd be so fun to go and take polo lessons. And they had little scrimmage games and stuff. And I ended up not going back for the simple reason that it was a really lousy lesson.
Well, I think you know?
Yeah. It was a lousy lesson. I learned practically nothing.
There is an old saying in marketing: do not market something horrible product or service-wise. Make sure you are prepared before you market, right? Because you're absolutely right. Yeah. The bad news travels a lot quicker than good.
Yeah. It was interesting because I chatted a lot with the other students that were there, and one of the other students in the lesson, because it was a group lesson, had been taking polo lessons there for several months. And it was interesting to get his perspective, and I thought, well, you know, I wonder why he's coming back. And it was basically the type of program where it was not so much a polo lesson as, we will put you on our polo horses and you figure it out. And that rider really enjoyed that type of learning procedure. Put them on there and let them run around and figure it out. So maybe it was less a case of they didn't know how to teach polo as I didn't appreciate that type of programs. So I guess that's something that you need to control expectations as well.
I would say absolutely. Kind of let them know coming in. I mean, that's why it's so great to be able to ask your clients what their goals are. So, you know, back in the day, if somebody said that their goal with me was to go to a horse show, that's great because I had my weekends free. I didn't have my children. I had a truck and a trailer and away we go. Well, now if I had somebody call me up and said, I want to go to a horse show, I go, I'm sorry, but I don't work on weekends anymore. I'm a mom now of two small children, and I want to spend time with them. So here's some people that I know in the area that go to horse shows. So
right.
I think you're absolutely right about
you're
that.
You're going to get a lot more good PR from that response than the disappointed student.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, let's on that note, let's switch gears a little bit and talk about the fact that you have now got the interest in that first new horse, and you want to head out and find yourself one. And we're going to bring on our first guest to talk about that.
Great. This is Jennifer Willey. And Jennifer has been teaching, coaching, and training for many years. She's done a lot in the camping world as well as in private and group riding lessons. She currently enjoys educating. She'd love to be able to visit and find out more about education. She has helped facilitate rescue and career changes for unwanted horses. She is a very active member of the Minnesota Horse Council, and she is also a CHA master instructor and clinic staff for us. Welcome, Jennifer. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you. Thank you for having me on this morning.
Jennifer, is there anything else that you would like to say about your background before we get started today?
I think you pretty much covered it, Christy. Thank you so much.
Okay, wonderful. Well, Jennifer and I, we were chatting about this topic, Glenn and Jen, and we were saying, you know, there's a big difference between buying and leasing horses for a business and buying and leasing horses for a private individual that wants to own their first horse. So Jennifer's going to kind of take the track today of those folks that are buying for a business and buying for either a trail ride operation or for a lesson program. So Jennifer, I'm going to start with a question of if I am starting a business or even if I've been in it for a while, do you feel, in your opinion, that it's better that I buy or lease my horses outright?
I really think that if the business is able to, owning the horses in the long run is the better bet. You have less traffic through your barn, so less opportunities for quarantining. And then also, if you have a horse for, you know, if you get one that works out, you'll have them for 10, 15, even 20 years. And those are the horses that are worth their weight in gold that every barn wishes they had. So that's the way to get them is to own them.
Absolutely. So where do I find these horses? If I want to go ahead and have horses that are going to be good for my business, what is a good idea of different places where I can go and track them down?
Well, and this is a little bit opposite to what you would say to someone who was purchasing a horse for a private party, but word of mouth is actually not a great way to get a lesson horse. Sometimes it works out if you're working with other instructors and trainers, but a lot of times people that own horses that have really nice horses that they've had for a long time, and they think that, hey, my horse would be great for a lesson program. And a lot of times they actually don't work out for the lesson program. A lot of horses are not able to handle having multiple different riders on them every day, all making mistakes all week long. So going to a private party by word of mouth, a friend of a friend or whatnot, a lot of times doesn't turn out to be as great as we'd like it to. So I suggest looking at websites, sales sites that are specifically for horse sales are very helpful. And, of course, keeping your ear to the ground is a good thing as far as your network goes, but asking friends if anybody knows if they have a horse for sale usually doesn't quite work out. I don't like Craigslist and Facebook for horse posting. The reason I don't is just because they're too easy to post on. Nobody has to pay anything. Not a lot of thought and effort has to be put into that. So when you go to a sales website that's specifically for selling horses, usually you have more serious sellers on there that are interested in moving horse. So auctions are another possibility. Auctions are buyer beware, as everyone knows. I think that if you are in the business of purchasing horses for your lesson program or your trail riding program, it is a good idea to attend your local auctions. Attend even without the interest in buying, just so that you can get used to the atmosphere, that sense of urgency in the atmosphere, watch what people are doing, see horses go through, get to know people, and get comfortable in that environment before you start actually purchasing.
Hey, Jennifer, I don't do so well at that. I've failed at auctions every time I go. I'm not allowed.
Not
she won't even
to.
Let me.
Nope. Right. Yes, auctions are a tough, tough place. I don't necessarily recommend auctions for purchasing, but if a person has a lot of experience and they've spent some time going to auctions and learning, I think that they can do okay there.
Risk. Yeah, it is a risk, and you should know what you're doing, and you should not be there unless you have somebody along that knows what they're doing.
Correct.
Because you will get screwed. I mean, there's no question about it. You know, on the other side of that, I've ended up with many great ponies and horses that I've used and driven. My lifetime pony that I had for years, we got at an auction for $90. So there are gems in there, but the gems are 5% of the 100% that are there.
I absolutely agree with you. And especially if you're a person that is buying a horse for yourself, if you're buying just for yourself, then absolutely an auction is not the place to go. if you're buying for a business, it can be helpful because you can get horses for a lot less money. And a lot of times with lesson horses and trail horses, we don't know if they're going to work out for the program for roughly, you know, a month to 6 months. It can sometimes take to figure out if that horse really likes that job. So if you're able to purchase the horse for a little bit less and then try the horse in the program for a while, tune the horse to the way you can. And if this horse still doesn't work out, the nice thing is that they're still pretty easy to sell because they were used in a lesson program. So that's the good point.
You can't, the other thing you can't do is fall in love with the potential lesson horses that you buy because it is a business, right? I mean, I know that sounds cruel, but it is a business, right? First and foremost, you're running a business.
Right. And it's, I think many business owners struggle with that. That's a real struggle. Personally, I struggle with that. I like all horses, but when I'm looking at a horse for someone else, I take away that emotional side. Definitely. I don't think of it, about it emotionally, even though I do like them all. So even the ones that no one else likes. another way, and this is more rare, but again, it can help. If there is a local horse trader that is trustworthy that you can develop a rapport with as a business, they can be a great asset to you. If you can call them and say, I need this type of horse, let me know in the next month if you see anything. Once again, that goes back to whether or not you can trust that person and you can develop that working rapport as a business. I've seen some very good relationships that way with lesson programs and horse traders. I've seen some really bad ones too, so they're all different, but it's just another idea. And getting back to word of mouth, you know, the big thing there is just, you know, you can always go and look, but a lot of times what happens is, especially if it's a friend of a friend, is, you know, you try the horse for lessons and the horse doesn't like it. You know, it might be a wonderful, wonderfully quiet horse, sweet animal, but they just don't like all those different people on them. And that can be disruptive for that relationship. So,
I'll tell you, Jennifer, every now and then, boy, can it work out, though, if you hear something like, I loved how you said, utilize your network. And, you know, that goes back to, as a professional, join volunteer clubs and boards. You might think to yourself, well, I don't have enough time. But if you're part of your local, you know, Parker Trail Riders, if you live in the city of Parker, or if you're part of your local Backcountry Horsemen chapter, if you're kind of into the trail riding deal, or if you're part of your local dressage association or breed association, boy, that network becomes great. I had a friend of mine who just recently retired, and she was trying to find homes for 10 lesson horses, and I ended up with one of them. And he's just fabulous. And then I had another friend out in California when I lived there who was moving and going out of state and just wanted to start her program over when she got there and was trying to find homes for, I think we had 8 lesson horses at the time. And I brought all my students and we rode them all. And we brought a vet who we trusted and he vetted them all. And he basically said, put them all on trailers and drive them away now for the price that she wants. She wants them to go to good homes. Go, go, go. Mm-hmm. So that's what we did. And we didn't bother with x-rays and do all that because, you know, they're older horses and they're supposed to have a few kinks and dinks. You know, that's part of the deal of most lesson horses. You don't want to go jump 4-6 on them, right? So we ended up just with this great experience. So if someone's going out for the first time and they're starting their business, what do you recommend that they do so that they don't fall in love with their lesson horse and they keep it as a business and they go ahead and are able to evaluate the horses that they're looking at? What are some thoughts there?
Right. Well, first, you know, gather up a list of things that you want your lesson horses to have. Depending on what kind of a facility you have, depending on your program, everyone's going to have a different set of requirements. So develop that list, write it down, and then start your search, word of mouth, websites, et cetera, et cetera. What I tell people to do is when they have that phone call with the seller, ask those questions that are on your list. So, for example, for myself, I ask, does the horse stand still for mounting, dismounting, tacking, and grooming? To me, it's vital if I have an 8-year-old child working around a horse, that horse needs to stand still. So a horse that fidgets a lot is not of interest to me for that particular situation. I'll also ask them if the horse ties, if they tie straight, if they cross tie, or if they have a tendency to pull back. Most of the time, I will recommend any program that a horse that pulls back when tied is not is too dangerous, really, for a lesson program, depending on what their program is like. If they're teaching a lot of group lessons and they have a lot of horses moving around, having one that doesn't tie is a risk. Now, I do know some lesson programs that have been able to get around that for really super good lesson horses by either not tying them or using some kind of a safety clip. But once again, for me, the being able to stand tied is extremely important and can be a deal breaker. For any type of horse, regardless of the program, I do expect that that horse has been around traffic and has been around dogs and has been down the trail a little bit. even if the lesson program never plans to bring the horse on trail or doesn't have dogs or whatever, I like a horse that has had a well-rounded background in their training and is used to some suddenness, unexpected things happening. And the best place to learn about unexpected things is a trail ride. So I do expect that they all can go on trail to some level, not necessarily with a student, but definitely go out without much problems with an instructor. Another question I'll ask is if the horse can be ridden in and out of arena gates. For Western programs and Western horses, sometimes a horse has had in its history a lot of gaming. And if that horse has had that, some of them can get gate sour, and that can be very dangerous. So one of the things I ask is if a student can ride the horse in and out of a gate of an arena without any issues. I also ask if the horse neck reins for Western horses, and then I'll also ask them how the horse is living. And when I go to the visit, I'll take a look and see, you know, how is the horse living now, and then what does my sight look like, and how different is it? Because for some horses, taking them out of their home and then putting them into something completely different, you might get a completely different animal, especially horses that have been on the same property their entire lives. So if you've got a horse that's been on one property for 15 years and then you move them over to a completely different setting, you might have to start over in training. So just something to keep in mind. I will also ask the seller if there are any blemishes that might make the horse appear unsound. I ask that question because I want to know if it's worth my time to come out. Case in point, I went to look at a horse a few years ago. This was for a private party, but it was a more expensive horse. But we had to drive 3 hours to go take a look at a horse that had foundered. And the owner didn't say that on the phone. Now, granted, she might not have said it anyway if I would have asked her. But it was disappointing because it was an entire day in the car to go look at a horse that we didn't even ride.
And that brings up a very important point that we learned that I learned in sales early on in my sales career, and that is only believe half of what everybody tells you. Whatever
right.
they say, cut it in half.
Right.
There you go. There's the truth
right.
somewhere in there.
I absolutely agree with you. And even, you know, with horses, it's so much tougher because I really think a lot of times when sales go south between buyer and seller or people feel like they've been ripped off, I feel like it might be even upwards of 80% of those times it's due to miscommunication between the buyer and the seller. Because I might say I'm looking for a really quiet horse, but what does that mean to that seller? What do they think a quiet horse is? Some people think a quiet horse is one that keeps walking and then you get on while they're walking and you just keep moving. Some people think a quiet horse is one that if you just hold back on the reins all the time, they stop. But then
yeah.
when you let them on a loose rein, they take off. So,
hey, it's not bolting, it's quiet.
Right, exactly, right? Yeah, you know, I mean,
doesn't
some people
turn
don't really...
or steer, but that's okay. It's quiet.
Right. Right. I mean, it really comes down to what the seller thinks they have. And so fleshing out that conversation on the phone is really important. And, you know, asking them, so what does it look like? How does the horse neck rein, you know? And when you go to ride, do you lunge first? Do you put them in the round pen first? Do you just get on and go? That kind of stuff. Just to get an idea of what they mean when they say what they mean. Because some people are telling the truth. They just aren't telling the truth for what you would think it is, if that makes sense. It's more of a misunderstanding.
A really good point.
And then,
yes.
Yeah. So yeah, and it's great to it's great when you meet someone that speaks the same language as you when it comes to what you mean when you say you need a broke horse. So, yeah, a couple of things. You know, we talked about emotion earlier. Definitely plan to go and look without emotion. Do not get attached. Don't start there. If you don't think that you can do that, then bring somebody with you to help you. If you want to dicker and price, show up at the trailer and be ready to buy the horse and leave. That if you can do that, that'll get things going. And another one, you know, when you're looking at horses, know that every horse has a hole. There is no such thing as a perfect horse. Now, that hole might not be any issue, but if you haven't seen it in your testing, know that it's there. It's there somewhere. So no horse is perfect, so just know that. And then while you're testing the horse and out there visiting, if there's any time during that time frame that you decide that you don't want the horse or you're not going to buy the horse, you see a deal breaker, what have you, it's appropriate then to stop testing. It's appropriate to then go, okay, thank you for your time, and, you know, we're not going to buy this horse today. So, yeah.
It's interesting that you talk about the hole. I talk about a negative, and, you know, when we've had through the years all of the friends we've had that have met the perfect guy or girl, and I always say, what's the negative? I always ask that, and if they haven't recognized the negative yet, you know they haven't gone far enough in their relationship yet. And if you know the negative and can live with the negative, then you're probably going to have a good relationship with that horse or person or whatever it is.
Yes, absolutely. Yep, and a lot of times in some sales you don't get a chance to find out, you know, what the negatives are yet. But you hope that your testing, you know, will kind of flesh some things out. So
that's why the divorce rate 50%.
That's right.
With horses and people.
And it's kind of like that with lesson horses and program horses too. If you're buying them, definitely, you know, I would say 1 in 20 is really, you know, really what you're looking at. Now, that doesn't mean you have to buy 20 to get one, but when you're looking at them, it is, you know, that's about the number to get the one that will actually stay with you for 15, 20 years. It's a special horse that can put up with a lot of different people making a lot of different mistakes. So when going out to test horses, I require that someone is there to ride the horse first. I want to see how that horse interacts with the person. I want to see and make sure that the horse is broke. And I want to see how the rider cues. So that's a requirement. I never go out and offer to get on a horse that I have not seen someone else ride. It's just not worth my neck. I learned that the hard way, actually. The first time I ever went out to look at program horses, I got on one horse, and the seller got on the other one. He was selling them both. And about 5 minutes later, I was bucked off into a roundbill feeder. So I have learned my lesson that way. Yeah, the horses hadn't been ridden all winter, and he didn't think it would be an issue. So, so that's how I learned that. And then when I'm testing horses, I go slow to start, and I ride the way that I ride. So I try to find the horse's cues that they know. I don't try to force them to learn what I know. I ride the way the horse rides, and I get to know the horse. Go, you know, get them through the paces, turning, stopping, walk, trot, lope. And then after I kind of get an idea of how that horse cues, then what I'll do is go ahead and start testing. And one of the tests that I use for horses that is almost foolproof is if you're in an arena, you can have the horse trot or lope, and then while you're trotting or loping, just quit riding while you're doing it. So quit using your legs, quit keeping the horse on the rail, quit directing the horse, basically, just sit there. And you'll kind of find out what happens, you know, what does that horse do when someone quits riding. Some horses go faster. They take off. Some horses stop. Some horses stop and go to the center. And the ones that are stopping and slowing down and going to the center, those are the best ones to try for a lesson program. Because when someone stops directing them, they stop working. The ones that, when you stop directing them, and then they start thinking of their own things to do, such as go faster or run to the gate or do different things like that, those are the ones that typically do not work out for lesson programs. Another test for lesson horses and also private parties, and this depends on the type of program you have, and this test is, I don't advise this test for every situation, for every person, and definitely it's something that you have to be somewhat comfortable with because it is not always super safe. But one thing you can do is take the horse and ride it away from home. So just ask the seller, hey, can I take off down the road and ride this horse by myself away from home? And if they say yes, and you ask them, you know, do you think anything bad's going to happen? Do you think the horse will like this? You know, if they say no, go ahead. You know, then go try it. Because what you'll find out there is how the horse does when they're by themselves and leaving home. And that is when you'll find out how upset the horse can get. And, you know, certainly it's more risky test, and it's one that you want to stop if you think you're going to have a problem. But it really, really lets you know what the horse, where the horse will go when they're uncomfortable, I should say. So never push things too far, but definitely, you know, so if there's any problems, quit, because you're looking for a horse that doesn't have a lot of problems. Any questions on the ride away from home test?
I'll tell you, I just have one comment. I want less than horses, but you said to have more woe than go.
Right. Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Yes. Yep, absolutely. I like a stubborn horse. I like a stubborn less than horse. Their training doesn't change very quickly. And, you know, overall, when I look at a horse, I'm thinking, okay, can a rider make mistakes without getting hurt around this horse and on this horse? Because that's what they're doing. They're really dealing with people who make mistakes. So that's overall what that horse needs. You'll see, you know, you'll need a horse that's solid and practiced in their training. Their training doesn't change. And that's why a lot of older horses work out so well, because they know what they know and they're not changing it. Younger horses can sometimes work out too, but you'll find the ones that have more stubborn personalities tend to do a little bit better and hold their training and not get irritated. intelligent horses work out really good too, as long as they like the job. So, but at the end of the day, yes, laziness, absolutely. You want a horse that knows when to rest. And I would even take that to any discipline. I like a horse that knows when to rest. It's time to take a nap, take a nap. I like a horse that if I'm teaching a tack and grooming lesson to a bunch of kids in the line of horses, everybody's sleeping. Absolutely, that's the best.
We're running out of time. So to wrap it up and to summarize, if you were going to give me a couple sentence summary, what would you say?
I'd say, you know, go into purchasing horses for your business with your eyes open. Try not to get your heart wrapped into it. Think about most important thing first. Can somebody get hurt around this horse? If you have a saddlebred facility and you pick up a quarter horse to use for your beginner lessons, you're doing the right thing. If you have a reining facility and you find a fantastic saddlebred that will work out great for your beginner riders, use them. Those beginners need a really good, safe horse so that they stay in the industry. People get hurt in the industry in three ways: financially, emotionally, and physically. Sometimes all three, sometimes just one. When that happens, they get out of the industry. So try not to facilitate that.
And those of us that are still around have been hurt in all three ways and are still in the industry.
And that's right, we are. Yep.
I don't know what that says about us, but we'll leave that for that's another show. Thank you, Jennifer, for joining us. What area are you in, by the way?
I'm in Minnesota.
Minnesota. Okay, good.
Minnesota.
Well, up there where the
yep.
snow is flying, and you're wishing it wasn't winter already.
Oh, we are in full-on winter right now, I'll tell you what.
Well, thank you, Jennifer. We really appreciate you joining us. Do you have a website?
I do not have a website, but I do teach out of Minnesota.
All right, very good.
And you
can
find her on chainstructors.com if you look up Minnesota and Jennifer. She'll come up.
Yep.
All right,
yep.
Last name is spelled W-I-L-L-E-Y. Thank you, Jennifer.
That's
it was
great.
All good information.
Thank you so much
appreciate
for having
it.
Me on. You all guys right. have a great day.
Well, that was all good information. I think the most important thing she said, and we've seen it all too many times, is you go from owning a horse personally, or horses personally, and what happens is when you go out to buy those, you tend to fall in love, and you buy them for all the wrong reasons a lot of times. And then when you go into business, you have that habit, and instead of looking at that horse as a business, you're going in with that same fall-in-love attitude, and that's where you end up with a lot of horses and none of them very good at anything. So that's one of the biggest mistakes we've seen through the years.
Yes, you're absolutely right about that. It happens time and time again.
Yep, and I'm not saying those horses don't deserve a home, but you also have to think about the fact that now you're in business as opposed to, you know, providing horses homes for free. That's where the difference comes in. Well, let's head off and change where we're not going to change gears. Yeah, we are going to change gears a little bit. Now we're talking about buying that horse personally, right?
Correct. Yeah, and especially for those that have never bought a horse before, their first horse ever, which I know all of us, Glenn, I don't care how long you've been in the business. I know you remember the very first horse you bought. Talk about an emotional attachment.
Right. Yep. That's right. I do. And it turned out to be my lifetime pony.
Isn't that great? I love that.
Yeah.
I was the same thing. I had a pony, too, a POA. His name's Popcorn, and everybody who knows me knows Popcorn, and no one's really ever met Popcorn because he was dead so long ago, but they all know him. Like, oh, here's Christy talking about Popcorn again.
Mine was Piper, I know exactly who that horse you're talking about. And by the way, Piper lived to be about 43 or 44. So
don't you love when ponies do that? Yeah, Popcorn lived to 36. Same deal.
I know.
Long time.
Ponies live a long time. And, you know, we drove that horse till she was 35 and didn't slow down at all, you know, and lived for another 10 years after that. So
yes, and I ended up actually teaching lessons on Popcorn. He was my personal horse when I was 12, and then I started teaching on him when I was in college, and he taught his last lesson when he was 34. So same type of deal. Just go, go, go.
Well, I'm sure Teresa, our next guest, has something to say about that.
Absolutely. This is Teresa Kackert. And Teresa has been a CHA clinic instructor since 2003 for us. Very exciting year for her this year. She is our Instructor of the Year. She got that honor in Kentucky a few weeks ago at our awards banquet. She is a certified instructor through Richard Schrake and also through Chris Irwin. She herself, though, oh my goodness, this gal has bought and sold a bunch of horses. That's what she does for a living. She's a consignment horse sales lady, and she also has run a huge trail ride operation down on the beach in San Diego. So she does many, many things, and I am absolutely thrilled to have my friend on today. Hello, Teresa. How are you?
Good morning. How are you guys? I'm probably a lot warmer than y'all are anywhere other than here.
California girl. She's right outside of Menifee by Temecula, the good old wine country there in that area. It's really, really nice. But Teresa, we were just talking a little bit about you, and you were on the show in January. You were actually on our first CHA show on horses in the morning. So it's great to have you back on again.
Yes, I'm very excited. Thanks so much for having me, you guys. It's so much fun to do and an honor to be able to participate.
Well, Jennifer was just on, and we were talking about horses from the standpoint of buying them for a lesson program or a trail ride program, and I know you've done a ton of that, but we're going to switch gears now and talk about that person that's buying their first horse. So they've never bought a horse before. They're brand new. They might have taken some lessons, might have leased one, might have not even done any of that. They're just looking for their first horse. Well, I'm just going to start here on question number one. Where would that person find a horse? What do they do?
Well, I think the best way for people to really start looking for horses is to go and visit people who have horses that are doing what they want to do. So if you're looking for a trail horse, go to some of the trailheads, go to some of the events, talk to people who are riding horses and actively doing that. If you want to go to shows, go to a show. And really word of mouth is the best way to find horses, I think, because then people have already talked to people. A lot of them personally know the horse and have a lot of experience with them. Other than that, I think probably your next best would be your periodicals and your trade type journals. There'll always be horses for sale in there. And I know I see people all the time who come to me and they say, I bought this horse off the internet and it was the prettiest horse I've ever seen. And I talked to the people on the phone and they told me it was wonderful. And when I bought it and got it home, it was totally different. And I'm like, really? I would have never thought that somebody could misrepresent a horse. So that happens really, really frequently with new people. And I think a lot of times there's just some misunderstanding in the communication. So even if you're shopping on the internet or you're doing something that way, you need to make sure that you actually go out and see that horse yourself. Really take the effort to get to know that horse. And sometimes I know beginners really think that they can go to an auction and get a good deal there, but boy, it's buyer beware at the auctions. And you really have to be careful because most of those horses that are there because they would be difficult to sell in to a private party, kind of private treaty type thing. So really, if you can go out and talk to the different breed clubs or organizations or riding in trail groups or go visit a show, that's going to be the best. But other than that, and I actually kind of have some funny little things here, because when we are shopping for horses, we all go and we read these classified ads for them. And so now there's kind of some things out and around that are classified ads translated. And it says, we've all heard that the horse clips, hauls, and loads. Well, clippity-cloppity is the sound his hooves make as he hauls butt across the parking lot when you're trying to load him in the trailer. So we have a lot of these funny little isms that really, you know, apply it. And then flashy. You've all seen that one where it says, oh, the horse is so flashy. Well, your life will flash before your eyes when you ride him. So make sure that you're able to translate, you know, not just on the humorous side, but what's actually going on when people are wanting to sell their horses. There's a lot of very legitimate reasons, and then there's reasons that might not be the best reason for a beginner to purchase that animal.
I had a student in the past, and she came to me, and she was a lady in her 50s, and she had never bought a horse before. It's going to be her first horse in her 50s. And, you know, as you well know with our sport, you can start at any time. So that was wonderful. She had a little bit of property. She's going to go do that. She went and looked at one, and she fell in love with it, and she was going to buy it, had me come out and look at it. And I said, you know, let's go look at 20 more. She just looked at me. She said, why would I do that? I go, let's go look at 20 more and make sure. Well, in this particular situation, actually the first horse she looked at was the one that she ended up buying, but it was a really good thing for her to go and see a bunch of different horses and experience a bunch of them. And I was also very proud of her to bring someone with her that had ridden horses before, had experienced them in different environments, knew the right questions to ask the owner, those kinds of things too.
Absolutely. And I think that that's super important. You definitely, when you go and you're horse shopping, you need to bring somebody with you who has the experience to say, wow, well, this is really probably not the best match for you. I've had clients who've come to me in the past who have young kids or, you know, younger teenagers or tweens, and they say, well, I want to get a young horse so they can grow up together. And that's the exact opposite from what you want to do. You want to be thinking, I want an older horse so that at least somebody in this relationship knows what the heck they're doing so that they can all stay safe.
Wait a minute, we have a sound.
Green on green makes black and blue. Wouldn't ride that horse if I were you. It's like walking on a hot, tight wire. Dynamite too close to fire.
There we go. Have
I
to get
love
that
it. So appropriate.
So
very
Kennedy
did
that
one.
There's a whole song with that, by the way. It's a whole song.
Funny.
Yeah. True,
well, it's so true, too. So yeah. True. Green and green does not equal a fabulous color. It equals black and blue.
No. Black and blue.
Absolutely.
I told this story before. Jennifer was giving a lesson to these really nice people, and she was a fairly new beginner. And they took lessons for a long time, and, you know, Jennifer would school everybody, do not go out and look by yourself, you know, have me come along, I'll go along. They never do, of course. And then she went and to the track, bought the thoroughbred right off the track, brought it home, and decided to ride it the first day, and ended up, this does not have a happy ending, and ended up hitting a wall when the horse threw her off on her first ride and breaking her neck. Her first day. So, you know, violating everything Jennifer had told her that was the right thing to do, she didn't do because, you know, sometimes people just know better. They go to the back side of the track, and they're, you know, they want to get rid of these horses. They're willing to sell them to anybody. They don't ask questions. So that's how this girl ended up with a broken neck.
Wow. Well, and unfortunately that happens all too often, and what an opportunity for somebody to really be an active participant and support the horse industry and be able to be passionate about what we're all passionate about. And instead, boy, that's just unfortunate that on the very first try they're done. And
we all know why it is, and you teach, you know, we've all had those beginner lessons before. It's because they want to save money. You know, they could go out and buy that horse for $400. They didn't have to pay Jennifer to go along, and they know what Jennifer would have said anyway, right? They all know what the instructor would have said, which is why they don't want the instructor along.
It's true.
It's because the instructor's going to say, don't buy this horse, but they want the $400 horse.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where the problem comes in. And I know
Absolutely.
I'm probably oversimplifying that, but I bet you that case happens more than not.
Oh, and because we sell a lot of horses for people, I see it over and over again. And I tell them, well, you've actually got yourself into a situation where you're going to spend a lot of money, because now before you can sell this horse to somebody else, you're going to have to invest a lot of training time so that they can then go on and the horse can be a productive part of society. And you just can't unload them and dump them and pass it from one problem to the next problem, because it just doesn't benefit the horses or the industry or the people. So you end up actually spending more money in the long run by the time you pay your hospital bills and then have the horse trained, and you'll never ride it or enjoy it.
So, Teresa, I have a question for you then. If I want to buy my very first horse, is it important, and can I have a trial period, or do you think I'm going to fall in love emotionally and never give the horse back? What are your thoughts on that?
I think trial periods are fantastic. Everybody should always ask for a trial period. Now, some people don't do trials because their horse is too valuable or things like that, but you should always ask for a trial. And I know that there are insurance policies that you can purchase that are set up to insure horses while they're out on a trial. Things like that are very mutually beneficial for both the owner of the horse and the person who's interested in purchasing it. But a trial is the best way to go. It gives you the chance to get to know the horse. But keep in mind, sometimes if you do a trial period that's only a day or two, well, that's not long enough for the horse to settle in. So you're actually having the opportunity to see the horse at the worst without getting the chance to see them at their best once they've kind of settled in and gotten used to your routine and your trails and what you're doing or your arena, that type of thing. So if you can do a trial period for a couple of weeks or for 30 days, that's really good. But you both need to be, the buyer and the seller, need to be extremely clear on what you are allowed and expected to do for that horse while you have it. If you're buying a jumper, how high can you jump the horse? If you're buying a trail horse, how far can you travel to go out on the trails as you want to ride? How many hours each day are you expected to ride the horse? And God forbid, if something happens, whose responsibility is it to care for that horse? And that's why it's really nice to spend the extra money and have an insurance policy that will help to cover both parties if something tragic did happen to the horse. I've had people who have taken horses on trial and gotten into an accident leaving the facility where they picked the horse up. So strange things do happen, and it's always good to have your bases covered. But trials are fantastic. If you can get one, you definitely should.
So speaking of having my bases covered, then, again, I'm excited. My very, very first horse ever. I am just going to get this contract, if the seller even does a contract, put in front of me, and I'm just going to sign on the dotted line. What should I be reading in that contract? How can I take a day or two to read it over? Should I have a lawyer look at? What are your recommendations to folks that are signing contracts when they buy horses?
Well, I think any time that you sign something, you need to make sure that it's something that you understand. And if the wording or the verbiage is such that you don't understand it, then definitely you should have somebody look at it who does understand it, either a lawyer or some other professional. But then one of the most important things you want to see in that contract is that the owner has clear title, so to speak, that there's no liens or ownership disputes on the horse. Unfortunately, we see a lot of horses that are sold due to marriages ending or kids going off to college, those types of things. And, you know, sometimes moms and dads are selling horses for their kids, but they might not own the horse itself. The kid owns it, and if the child is over 18, then they still are very much the legal owner, or husbands and wives who are splitting. So you want to make sure that there's no liens or ownership disputes, that they actually own the horse. And one of the best ways to do that, especially if you're purchasing a registered horse, is to make sure that the horse's registration papers are in the name of the person who is selling the horse. That's super important because that kind of shows that they are owners of the horse and they have the right to be able to sell it. And while we're talking about registered horses, you also really want to make sure that you take a look at those registration papers and that the registration papers are actually original papers. I've had so many people come to me with horses that they think are registered, and they have a Xerox copy of some other horse's papers. And that's not going to cut it. Yeah.
Well, so, and if the seller says, I'll get you those papers, I just don't have them here right now, you will never get the papers, ever.
Never. Never, yeah. And that's one of the things.
They are lying to you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We have had in our own business here, we have had so many issues with that because we sell horses for other people and act as their agent. And our contracts, ours say that that the seller of the horse won't be paid out until they produce original papers. So we actually see the papers, make sure they match the horse and that they have originals and that they are registered in the owner's name before we even offer the horse for sale as a registered horse. Otherwise, they have to sell it grade and as an unregistered horse. And that saved us a lot of headache and heartache for people who are interested in purchasing a horse. Because if you're buying a horse that you want to show and breed shows, you got to have papers that go with that horse. So that's huge. And make sure when you do purchase the horse that you actually do get a bill of sale for the horse. And this will prove your ownership. Now, in California, we're not a brand inspection state, but in some states, you know, you need to be able to prove ownership. When you do get your brand inspection, so a bill of sale makes that really easy to do. And it's much easier if you do have a fire or evacuation or something. You're needing to prove ownership of the horses that you're picking up that have been evacuated, that type of thing. Also, really super important is to that you have clear purpose of what the horse is being used for. If you're buying a horse that you want to be able to have as a 2/6 hunter, that's exactly what the owner is representing. Is that this is a 2/6 hunter? You should have already jumped the horse and done the horse and used them in the skill that you're asking for. But you want to make sure that you have a clear understanding of purpose in that contract also. And back to our previous questions with the trial, let's say you're not paying for the horse in full. You're putting a deposit down on that horse to take it out on trial. Well, you want to make sure that your contract says that you can get that deposit back. You have a refundable deposit if you bring the horse back when they're not going to work out for you, if it is something that you're going to be returning that horse. And your terms of payment. You want to have a clear understanding of how you're actually going to pay for this horse for both the owner and the seller. Are you going to make payments? Are you going to pay outright? Are you going to pay by check, cashier's check, cash, wire transfer, you know, those types of things. So I think the more clear and concise you are before you sign and before there's any money exchanging hands, then the more smoothly everything is going to go. And you do want to have on there somewhere when you pay the horse off in full, that it says paid in full, so that there is no more dispute on, you know, you still owe on this horse or not. Because sometimes people, you know, horses are very, very emotional for both buying and selling. Parties have an emotional attachment to this special animal, and sometimes our emotions can cloud our good judgment on either end, and people, you know, can act a little silly. So having those papers spelling out exactly what both people are going to do makes it a whole lot easier if there are any problems that arise later.
And I do want to mention the brand inspection thing again. You know, I moved here to Colorado from California, which, like you said, does not require brands, and here in Colorado we do. And I honestly thought when I first came here, well, my horse doesn't have a physical brand on it. I don't need a brand inspection. Okay, it has nothing to do with a freeze brand or a lip tattoo or a hot brand. Nothing to do with that. It has to do with that's how you have to transfer horses in quite a few states, actually. So wherever you're located, you know, I think that that's key. We have to have our brand inspection papers to be able to travel anywhere within a certain mile radius of our homes, like if we're taking our horses to a horse show or going out on the trail or whatever the case may be. You can be stopped, and especially going across state lines, you can be stopped. And much like you were talking about, Teresa, having a bill of sale in California, your brand inspection papers here cover that, and it's required by law. There's not really the brand inspection police that's coming after you if you don't do it, because it's normally ignorance that causes us not to do it because we just don't know any better. But, you know, that's a key thing. And, you know, your horse council, your state horse council can help you with those rules about buying and selling horses. Sometimes they're a very good resource for you. So I kind of recommend that to folks too. So I think the biggest issue, and one that I want to spend quite a little bit of time talking on, Teresa, that I know you are so good at because you've had so many different horses, what with your trail program and now your sales program and your lesson and training program, the whole confirmation and, you know, how confirmation or how the horse is put together, not only physically but also how they're put together mentally, how their temperament is, can be such a huge thing for a first-time buyer depending on the goal of that person. And people get very confused between the difference of unsoundness versus a blemish. And I just want to kind of start to tackle this road in whatever way you think makes the most sense for the folks that are really wanting to learn more about that so they can go into this without blinders on and can truly understand the difference between those words and what they mean.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think that that's a huge issue. Oftentimes, unsoundnesses are things that are actually going to affect your direct usability of a horse. If they're unable to use one of their legs properly, or if they can't see out of both eyes, if there's something, or even one eye, all those things would be considered an unsoundness. Some of the big unsoundnesses that we deal with are lameness is probably the biggest. I spoke with a vet, a couple of years ago now, and he said over 60% of all of the horses he sees in his practice, and we're talking about routine exams like vaccines and floating and doing those types of things, over 60% of the horses he sees in his practice have some sort of lameness issue. So if you're looking to buy a horse, you know, you can pretty much figure 6 out of 10 of those horses are going to have some sort of unsoundness or lameness issue going on. Now, what a lameness for one horse might not necessarily be, and a deal breaker might not be a deal breaker for another. I've had a horse that I had for sale, and the horse had a vet check in the morning as a show jumper, and then it was a very calm, easygoing horse, and it did not pass because it was not sound enough on the suctions where the veterinarian actually takes the horse's leg and kind of bends it past where the horse normally bends it and holds it there for a certain amount of time to see how they're going to move once they release that joint and trot them off. So the horse didn't pass that test as a jumper, but then later on in the afternoon, somebody else came and looked at that horse, had a vet check scheduled, and the horse passed with flying colors as a trail horse because there's going to be a lot different stresses placed on that joint as a jumper than there would be as a trail horse. So a horse can be unsound for one job and be perfectly sound for another. So unsoundness is something that can be very vague and hard to put your finger on because there's so many variances in it. But a lot of the things that we'll see bowed tendons where there's been some sort of damage to the tendon, and it can heal up and be very usable as a trail horse, but it ends a lot of our racing horses' careers. If our overrides off the track, oftentimes we'll have bowed tendons, and the racing is too stressful, so now people are trying to sell them as something else. So bowed tendons are a big thing that we see. And the ring bone can be huge. And ring bone is going to be where they have extra calcium put down on the bones inside their hooves or around their joints. And that can be an issue. Sometimes you can have ring bone on a horse that doesn't bother it at all. And other times it can be very, very painful if it's near a joint and it's in the lower leg. And they'll be lame on that. But now that our horses are living longer, we see a lot of arthritis. Too. As we use our horses and do a lot of different things, you'll see arthritis. And a lot of arthritis can be managed, and some of it, they're just too lame to be able to be productive. And any kind of serious hoof issue, we've all heard that, you know, no hoof, no horse, and that is entirely true. They have a lot of weight-bearing surface. So those would be kind of unsoundnesses that could be absolute deal-breakers depending upon what you want the horse to do. Now, conversely, we have something that's called a blemish. And a blemish is going to be something that you might notice, but actually doesn't affect the overall usability of the horse. And I find that a lot of times people who are purchasing their first horse see the blemishes, and it can be very, very big deal to them because blemishes are oftentimes quite noticeable, but they're most often very cosmetic. So a blemish is not something to worry about. And probably the blemish that we see the most and people kind of freak out about the most when they're thinking about purchasing a new horse is splints. So those small bones that are just vestigial bones on the alongside of the cannon bone on the horse are held on with very small little tendons, and they can oftentimes come loose and you know, they'll make a bump on the horse's leg as they lay down new calcium deposits there to support those little bones that are kind of vestigial toes that are left over from their evolution process. So splints are something that we see a lot of, that when the splint is active, when that little piece of bone is actually moving, it can be quite painful, but once it sets up and gets the calcium around it and hardens, you're just going to have a blemish. So you'll have a bump either on the outside of the cannon bone or on the inside of the cannon bone, depending upon which splint they actually pop loose. And another thing that we see is wind puffs. So right around the joints, we see these a lot in the fetlock area, there'll be a little swelling, and you can kind of push on it, and it goes away. And then once you take your finger away, it pops right back out. And those are just extra fluid in the little tendon sheath, and this extra fluid that lubricates that tendon. Purely cosmetic. It's very common in a horse that's done a lot of work, especially if a horse has been worked in deep sand or kind of used those joints. But it's not something that's going to affect the horse's usability. And then if they have any kind of swelling on their elbow, like a capped elbow or a capped hock, they'll have that there. And usually those are just from laying down. And some people call them a shoe boil if they have those on the elbows. So those are things that are going to be blemishes. And also, especially if you're buying a horse that's been kind of a ranch horse or has been used a lot, sometimes they'll have superficial scars. If you have horses that are living out in big pastures, they might have scars either from other horses or from getting into something that they shouldn't have, but it doesn't affect their usability at all. Once the scar is healed up and they've had a laceration that's been stitched back up, then it's not as big a deal. But you must have a pre-purchase exam done when you purchase a horse. Let the veterinarian who has been to school and done a ton of stuff be the one who decides, okay, you want a trail horse, you can live with X, Y, and Z, or you can't. So really use your resources. And most veterinarians just love being able to educate new horse owners and kind of get them started on the right foot. And that's a huge resource. And as people selling horses, as the seller is selling the horse, they should encourage people to have a vet check. And I always recommend, even if you're buying an inexpensive horse, to at least spend a few dollars and have some basic x-rays shot of the horse, especially films of their hooves and feet. And that gives you a baseline. It gives you something that you can now show to your farrier and have your horse shod appropriately and prevent any kind of lameness issues. Or if you have changes later on in this horse as it ages or as you're using it, now you have a baseline. So you know what they were like. Now you know what they're like now, and you can make changes accordingly. But veterinarians inspecting the horse in a pre-purchase exam before you actually pay for the horse is tremendously important, and it's something that should not be skipped over at all. And it gives you good insight into the horse's disposition, because the vet's going to be doing things with them that aren't necessarily comfortable or their horse's favorite thing to be doing on a Sunday afternoon. And it lets you know how they're going to react.
Teresa, that's all good information, but we're plain running out of time. Christy, yeah. Did you want to wrap?
Yeah, I want to wrap up and just say, for those of you that live in Southern California, you're very spoiled, because you can go and find Teresa, and she can go ahead and help you find that first horse. Her website, go ahead, Teresa, and give it to everyone.
It's allamericanhorses.org.
Wonderful. Thanks so much for being on today, Teresa. We appreciate it. It was great information.
Oh, my pleasure. You guys have a great afternoon.
All right. Thanks, Teresa. Well, we learned a little bit, I hope, today about buying horses, whether you're looking for one for your lesson program or for yourself or your first-time horse buyer. It really, all of that stuff applies, whether you're buying your first horse or your 12th horse. It all still applies. You know, it's so interesting to get your guests on, because they're always so knowledgeable, and I think that's one of the great things about the Certified Horsemanship Association, which apparently I can say. is one of the great things about the organization, is you have so many great resources.
I'll tell you, and they're all just good people. You know, we're all breed, all discipline. We all play in the sandbox together. We just believe in safe horsemanship and just making good partnerships out there. And what I think I really loved today about the show, Gwen, was that there are some differences between buying as a professional for a lesson program or a trail program versus buying a first horse. It's not necessarily the same. And I think that is key for people that are not only buying their first horse, but for people that one day might start a business, knowing that your mindset might be a little different when you go in to buy those horses.
Right, definitely. And where can people find, if they want to find an instructor in their area that's in the CHA, where do they go?
They go to chainstructors.com, and they can either do an advanced search, and they can go by zip code, city, last name if they know the person, and they'll come up in their area.
Very good. We appreciate you being here. Now, if you've missed some of the CHA's and Christy's last episodes, She's done many of them now since the beginning of the year. Just head on over to horsesinthemorning.com, and you can find a list. Or just search for CHA in the search box, and it'll bring up all the past episodes that that she has done with us. It's the third Tuesday of every month, and the CHA also has a page on their website where you can go and see the past episodes, too. Isn't that right? Do I have that right?
That is correct. Absolutely.
Yeah. And, of course, you'll be back again next month. Now, does the CHA have anything that people can buy for stocking stuffers?
Oh, we do. We have our level 1, 2, 3, and 4 manuals that talk a lot about those unsoundness and blemishes that Teresa was bringing up and a lot of other things as well. So, yes, go and visit if you would like and see what's out there. We would love you to come shop with us.
All right. Very good. Thank you, Christy. We appreciate you being here. And, of course, we'll be back tomorrow morning here on Horses in the Morning. Jamie will be here. We have the EquityMFG.com Celebrity Trivia Challenge tomorrow. And get your ads in while we're talking about all of this. Get your bad Craigslist ads in for really bad ads on Friday. Just go to Craigslist and look for some badly written ads selling horses or goats or pigs or anything farm-related and send them off to Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. Put really bad ads in the subject line and copy and paste the entire ad into the email, and we will read them and have a little chuckle with them on Friday. We look forward to that. It's always everybody's favorite time of the week. Well, thank you very much, Christy, and we'll talk to you again next month.
Have a good one.
See everybody. Be safe. Wear your helmet.